Hello and welcome to Tech Advantage, a podcast by the Luxembourg Institute of Science and Technology. In business, spin-offs are like those children who want to do everything by themselves, who grow up fast and leave the nest to become independent, to do their own thing. In Luxembourg's rich research environment, spin-offs serve as a catalyst for innovation. They offer a pathway for researchers to translate their ideas into tangible solutions. Today we have with us one such researcher whose journey began within LIST, but who, since some time now, has taken off to form his very own spin-off. Arno Gutleb. Hello, Arno, and a very warm welcome to Tech Advantage.
Good morning and hello from me.
So, today, as I started by saying, I'm a little nervous because this is the first time I'm going to interview, like, you know, until now I've been interviewing researchers who are doing research and just that. And you have another feather on your hat, which is a researcher turned into entrepreneur.
Yeah, I think we can say that. We have incorporated the company in Vitrolize in June 22.
Yes.
And so now we are on the go.
Yes. Today we will talk about a little about, you know, your journey, because I've been working here, I know a little bit. And I know that it has not been, I mean, nothing short of an adventure. When did it start?
The specific idea going into a startup came probably about a year before COVID hit. But the journey, in fact, began much earlier. I'm by training a veterinarian. I worked in Vienna. I worked in the Netherlands. I worked in Norway. I came to Luxembourg 16 years ago.
So sorry to interrupt. You're a veterinarian?
Yes.
Now that I did not know.
No, nobody knows. I could run my practice.
Really?
Yeah, I would have to register here in Luxembourg, of course, at the ministry and probably do an exam on the law on having a pharmacy, because veterinarians have their own pharmacy in-house. So I would do some legal exams, but technically I could do it. Practically, no. I have no clue anymore. I go with my dog to my vet.
But it explains a lot, you know, you being a vet and you being, you know, involved in a research which avoids animal testing. It does make sense. But we'll come to that later on. Let's go back to the start of the journey.
So what I wanted to say is, in all these different academic environments, in research centers, in universities, I learned a lot on how to organize things. You take the best of everything, and this I took with me to Luxembourg. And from the beginning, I tried to establish the best of everything in my tiny group and then in a larger group. And we developed in the last 16 years very unique technology, and this technology is now the centerpiece of the startup.
So there are two things that we want to discuss today with you. It's the technology, but also your journey in creating the startup. Let's talk about the technology a little bit at first, just to give it a, you know, a context. So you came to Luxembourg as a researcher.
Yes, correct. So I joined one of the two public research centers at that time, which now merged into LIST.
Okay.
And immediately, quite in the second year, we thought about expanding the portfolio of what we do in the group.
So what were you doing in the group?
So I came with the idea and with the support of my head of department to set up a group to develop methods for the safety of nanomaterials.
Okay.
So if you think about nanomaterials, you can be exposed via your skin, via your intestine if you eat or drink them, or via your lung if you inhale them. Now, skin is not an issue because a healthy skin is not penetrated by nanomaterials. Intestine, so uptake via drinking or food, was not a problem because there was a lot available on testing safety. But when it comes to inhalation, nanoparticles are so small, they go all the way down in the deepest part of your lungs, the so-called alveolar region. That is where we also exchange oxygen and CO2 when we inhale and exhale, and they go there. And for this specific area of the lung, there was no method to test for safety available. So there was really a gap
in the entire world.
Science, yes.
Wow.
At that time, there was nothing on inhalation for the alveolar region. So that's why we started, and then we had...
And you started what? In the sense what? Like a screening method? What did you start?
Yeah, we got one PhD approved by the FNR, Fonds National de la Recherche. Yeah. And the idea was to develop a method to test the safety in in vitro, meaning cell culture model, that resembles the alveolar region of the lung. And that was a four-year journey just to have a first working model. We still use it. It works very well for irritation and inflammation.
So when you talk about nanomaterials, nanomaterials in what? In what kind of substances?
I mean, they can come in as a powder. If you think about occupational exposure, somebody may produce a powder. Somebody may pack a powder into some bags that are sold to another customer. They may come by mechanical influencing, construction materials.
What about chemical substances? You know, the people that use to clean their houses and stuff.
Yes, but usually they are not nano. These are chemicals. But we can also test in our model. We can test everything you can inhale. So we can test gases. We can test liquids that evaporate. We can test dry powders. We can test small, let's say, spherical materials. Think about something like a football, but then in nano size. We can do fibers. Everybody has heard about asbest. Asbestos.
Oh, yes. I'm asthmatic, you know. So I when I was in India, I used to be severely, because you know about the pollution,
yeah.
You know, I was severely ill. Here it's a little better. But I know about these, you know, whenever I am in contact with certain kinds of powder or certain kinds of chemical, I always... So this technology could actually help asthmatic patients, right?
Yes, exactly. That's what we did in a second PhD, which was internally funded. And the second student then started from the first PhD model.
Yes.
And adapted it so that it can cover something very specific, what we call respiratory sensitization, or what you call asthma. Or you know, you can get wet eyes, you can have a running nose.
Yes, exactly.
And in the final, in the worst version, it's asthma.
Yeah.
And now we have the world's only model here in Luxembourg, which can identify chemicals, materials, everything you can inhale, whether it has the potential during the lifetime of the product, meaning in production, the use, the recycling later, to induce asthma in workers, in consumers, in humans.
I have another question. So the model, how will it help concretely the people who are suffering from allergies? I don't understand. So how will it be used? It'll be used by manufacturing companies to see whether... Ah, okay.
Because that's the problem in the moment. We, as not being, let's say, in producing industry, we have a tendency to say industry is bad. And there have been things in the past which we are not good. But when it comes to this specific aspect, respiratory sensitization, industry is completely innocent. Meaning there is no test, not an animal test, not a cell culture test that can predict whether a material that you develop today that you may have in 5 years on the market will induce asthma in humans. So the way to test it, in fact, is completely blind. You produce it and you hope you don't induce asthma. When the first reports come back either from a producing site or from consumers that there is asthma observed, then you get restriction on the material. Maybe it's completely retracted from the market. But industry had no way to find out before. And that's where Invitrolyse comes in the picture, because now the industry can come very early. They can come with 5 chemicals to me and say, listen, which of the 5 is maybe the one we should not further develop? And then I can tell you, okay, 1 and 3 seem to be fine. 2 is intermediate and 4 and 5 don't touch, because this seems to be highly sensitizing.
I know that there is another part of this technology that you have developed. It's the animal-free testing.
Yeah, so classically cell culture, let's say it like this, people doing cell culture, what we call in vitro, we always say we do not do animal experiments, so we are the good guys. But if you carefully look, in order to make the cells grow, we use since the 1950s fetal calf serum. So that comes from an animal. That animal was not asked to provide serum. That animal actually died in the process of collecting serum. So globally, estimations say 5-6 million calves are slaughtered just before birth to give me the serum that I can do non-animal work.
Oh my
so
God.
It's not completely correct. So what we have done in List is to, with careful attention, developing our own cell culture media, etc., to have now a version of this model where we do not use any serum. Another aspect what is used is from slaughterhouse. You use something from pig, which you use in the process. We can avoid this. So there is no any slaughterhouse material anymore involved. So finally, our whole model is now really, in fact, vegan. We don't use any animal product in the process.
And how have you substituted that? Have you found anything like synthetic or?
Yeah, you can use enzymes coming from bacteria replace the pig enzyme. And for the media, we used serum because it was always used. Because somebody in the 1950s thought, okay, in order to make cells, I have to add something to feed them. That was never scientifically carefully dissected. What of the products in a serum is really needed? And now we have done it. List has meanwhile a homemade medium which you can use. There are also commercial ones available. They are more expensive. Cells grow a bit longer, but slower, longer. But it's not a technical problem. It's just how you plan your experiments.
Right. Okay. Now let's go back to the spin-off journey. Now that we know a little bit more about the technology, I just wanted to know, how did this idea of becoming independent, leaving the nest, come into your mind?
It's a kind of funny story. On one hand, we had a jump project. This is a project from the FNR to bring something to the market. We entered this project with the clear idea to develop something which can be licensed.
Mm-hmm.
We never thought about doing it ourselves. There were some hints, indication, a soft push from the panel in this situation to think about doing it ourselves. But what happened was then actually my department, Erin, we got a new valorization officer.
Okay.
And I remember still, I came home from a travel to a conference in late November, early December, and my colleague with whom I share the office said, "What do you think about having a company?" And I laughed and said, "Tommaso, come on. We are academics, we go for papers, maybe for patents, but not about a company. Why do you ask?" And he said, "Yeah, have you met Asia?" I said, "Who is Asia? I don't know."
Yeah.
He said, "Yeah, it's our new business developer." And at that time in Erin, meanwhile in List.
Ah, okay.
So he said, "If you are sure, then you can talk to him, but otherwise don't talk to him because he will convince you." And I again laughed. That was Monday afternoon. I said, "Forget it. He will not."
Yeah.
He came Friday at 5 o'clock to my office. We talked until 7. I came home to my wife and I said, "What about having a company?" And that's really how it was.
How did she react?
She was very positive. She said, "If you think it's fun, I support it." And then, yes, then we, of course, had to think. Me with my family, with some colleagues, there were more talks. We presented it to the CEO at that time. Then COVID hit, which was, of course, delaying the whole process or slowing down the whole process. We had quite some time on discussions on how to organize it. You need a license agreement. Everything is settled. And since June 22, there's a company with me now as the only founder and List employee currently working in the company.
Just going back, rewinding a little bit until June 2022, because I'm sure that if there are listeners now who are interested, who have this, eureka moment, I have an idea, I probably will also want to go through this process. What, in a few words, what was that entire procedure? I mean, what were the different steps that you had to take?
First, of course, you have to take your own decision that you want to go. I also think you cannot go with hesitation. If you want to go, you have to be convinced.
Mm.
Then once you are convinced, of course, you need to take all the discussions within a List. to get approval and this and that. And there are different ways how you can set up a startup within Lyst. And at the same time, I think you have to start maybe even reading about management, because there are so many things you have to consider economically, IP-wise, and all these things. So these are things we usually don't know as scientists.
So do you always have to go through, in Luxembourg, an FNR jump project for your research to be...
No, you don't need to, but it's a good help. I mean, the FNR jump really helps you to do the last step.
Okay.
From having a patent, having maybe some high impact factor papers, having even in our case, we had already one client as Lyst, so we did service for one.
Within the project itself?
Yeah, we did, or even before we did the jump. And during the jump, we had two projects with a very big company. So that also helped to develop the model. But then really to go to the market, you have to know, for example, transferability. I mean, if you can do it, that doesn't mean that if I get a new employee, he or she will also be able to get the same data.
Yeah.
So you have to get this data to be also really convinced, yes, we can do it. The method really works. It's a bit more than just the academic, because in academia,
We
usually do it once, you publish once, and you never do it again. Some people say that's one of the principles of academia. you don't want to repeat, because maybe you find out it doesn't work. The moment you want to go to the market, you have to be sure that your client always gets the same results.
Yes.
And all this was, so to say, financed by the jump.
Okay.
It depends probably on the product and the maturity of the product, whether you need a jump or not. Legally, it's not an obligation.
So what did you do? After the jump, what did you do?
After the jump, that was about the time that we started to talk to Lyst Corporate about how we can do it, what are the conditions, etc. And that was a process between me with support from the VTO, with legal at Lyst.
What is a VTO? Just for
Valorization
the
Technology Officer.
Yes.
And our legal department, and also at one moment, also, of course, Chief of Finance, the CEO. They, at different moments in this process, they all had their comments.
Yeah.
And finally, we came to an agreement, and then it was signed and the company was incorporated.
In 2019, you started the journey?
Yes, probably that's around 2019.
Yeah. And so I'm sure you have faced hurdles. If you can just let us know, what were the challenges along this way of creating the company?
Yeah, you know, having COVID during negotiation doesn't help. Because everything is in home office. People were probably taken up by other things. Everybody had focus also on different things, also, of course, private. So, and not being able to talk in person, but on Teams, it takes also some dimension of human-human interaction. So, and under these specific conditions, to have a kind of startup coming out of Lyst, and I was a kind of, almost experimental baby, because all the other spin-offs Lyst had before were created in completely different ways. So in a way, I'm the first one doing it without external capital and really as a startup coming out of Lyst. So everything that we experienced was a learning process, not only for me, because for me, of course, it was the first time, but it was, in fact, also for legal. It was the first time doing this approach. So they had to make up their mind. How do we want? What is possible in Lyst? How do we want to support this? What do we not like? And what maybe Lyst does not like, is this acceptable for a startup? So we had to find our compromises, our negotiations, and finally we came to, I think, a good contract which serves the purpose of both entities.
And which other institutions did you have to go through? I mean, I'm thinking because, you know, in the startup environment, did you have to go through any other institution to create your, to have the license, to have the, it is patented, I imagine.
Yes. So the technology was patented, but that was done, of course, within Lyst, within the department.
Yes.
What you do, but that's for everybody the same, whether you're a startup or just have any other company in Luxembourg, of course, you need to go to a notary, you have to register the SRL, you have to have the money on the bank, and all these, there are some legal procedures. I did, and I still have a lawyer who helps me with this, who is very firm on the law in Luxembourg. I do have an external business advisor, somebody with 25 years of experience in this specific sector, who tells me what to do, what not to do, where I can go and give a test presentation before I go to a client, who commented on the website, and all these kind of things, who has a lot of experience. So that definitely helps. And then, yeah, maybe it's also now the moment to mention, but you may know that I got a Fit for Start. So last year I applied to a program
in
Luxembourg, Lux Innovation, the Ministry of Economy. It's called Fit for Start. There were originally 361 companies, I think, applying. 14 made it to the last stage, meaning getting one, which was very exciting to get this grant in October in a public presentation. And now it started. So now I have once a month, 2 days of training. I have two individual coaches, 90 minutes every month, each of them. I have to present, to pitch to a 9-person panel. And if the company graduates, then there is also the second year assured. Otherwise, the Fit for Start stops after 1 year.
How does it feel like to be an entrepreneur?
Really like it. To be honest, I like it.
What do you like about being an entrepreneur?
I think one of my strengths already when I was just an academic, I liked to talk to people. I like to connect people. I like to help people. Mm. So people in my group, they know we always had scientific visitors that had a problem they could not do at home. So I said, oh yeah, come, we can fix, we can help. That's also why we had lots of papers. We have a very big network as a group. And I think this character feature also helps because, of course, you have to talk to people. You have to maybe be convincing. You have to be, if you're not convinced about your own technology, how are you going to convince a hesitating client? And I think the most important is you have to be authentic and you have to maybe stand with 2 feet on the ground. You have to know who you are, your strengths, your weaknesses, etc. And then I also like to travel, and of course, having clients means also to travel.
How big is your team now?
In the moment, we are 2 persons, of which only one is an employee. It's one of my postdocs from List that joined me in this endeavor. So she is now, right now, while we talk, working in the lab. Yeah, maybe also we have not said it, but I do rent a cell culture lab from Erin, from our department. I rent an office, so the idea is that the company stays within the building of Bellevaux as long as at least we fit with the size. If I outgrow my lab, it would be nice. If not, we still can have a nice company in the current size.
And what does the future look like for Invitrolize?
We are having clients from year one. So we had last year clients. I was last week on a conference where we got 2 more. Yeah, the contracts are not signed, but it's decided. So we multiplied 22 by a factor of 2. So we doubled in 23 the income from 22. We have already now, meaning let's say first 6 months of this year, we have doubled already 23 in the first 6 months, or equaled, sorry, which means probably we will double again this year, 23. So, and that means that at the end of the year, autumn, maybe already in the summer, depending on the cash flow, we will hire maybe 1, maybe 2 more people, which also allows you to have again more clients. So we are already busy with a kind of scale up of the activities.
Okay. Do your clients, are they only from Luxembourg and the greater region, or they are from outside?
I have no customer in Luxembourg at this stage. They're all from outside. They're globally. If people can go on the website. I have some clients where you find the logo. I can say it. There is, for example, Evonik, a 15 billion euro German chemical industry where we do things together. We have worked with Physicians Committee of Responsible Medicine. It's an NGO in the US. We have worked with RIFM, Research Institute of Fragrance Materials, which is kind of the research center for everybody using or producing fragrances. So all the cosmetic industry, washing powder producers, they are financing this organization. I do have a few clients that want to be anonymous, which is also
okay.
Now we have a first client signing from Japan. We have interest from the US and India, so it's really...
In India, yes.
Yes.
We need that.
Yes.
Because I was thinking, you know, the model itself, and it's amazing to see you so grounded and so... I mean, because the model, in my little head and in my little imagination, it is groundbreaking, right? Because it was not there before. And people, I know because I've suffered, I suffer from this. And it can be such a boon, a blessing to people who suffer from these things, right? From allergies.
I'm sure using our technology, industry will for a large part avoid to release asthma inducing materials in the future, which will be of course a benefit for many, many people.
Yes.
It will also be a benefit of course for industry, because investing in development, investing in marketing and then having to take it from the market is also money which is better used for other purposes. It also damages the brand of a company if it becomes public.
Yeah.
But it's finally mainly the humans on the other side, the exposed people that will benefit.
Yeah, I think that is one of the most important takeaways of this model as well. I want to end our discussion on a little advice mode from you. If you can just... I know you said that, you know, to be convinced about your own technology, of course, which is very important. Otherwise, how are you going to convince other people or convinced about your own idea? What other advices can you give to future entrepreneurs?
I think you need to have an understanding. It sounds maybe strange, of the market. I don't feel like I have a real understanding, let's say, of the market. You can buy market studies.
Did you do a market research before you started?
Yeah. We had to do this as part of the jump. Otherwise, you cannot enter the jump. So we have one. Of course, I have been in the field, let's say, of inhalation toxicology now for at least 12, 15 years. I know the other companies in the field. I know who are my competitors. There are also many companies which are more, we consider us as friendly companies, meaning that it's a small environment. And if one of the 5-6 companies working in this field does really bad or has a scandal, it's impacting the whole environment.
Yeah.
So we are happy if everybody does well, because then it's increasing the market for everybody. So this is a very supportive environment, which is definitely not something you can expect in every field. I am lucky to have this. Yes, and while you are an academic, it's definitely good to already, when you go to conferences, also visit exhibitors, to think about or maybe even to have non-academic clients. We were lucky that we were approached by big industry when they saw the model in List. Can we do something together? So we had some service offers. We had some collaborative research, which also resulted in high impact publication, which again helped to establish trust by other stakeholders, by industry in our model.
Okay. I hope you've given, you've inspired some other people who are thinking of launching their own spin-offs. Thank you so much, Arnaud, for your time today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you so much.
Goodbye.